God, I believe that the start of all gratefulness is with knowing you. It's very hard to be thankful and have a spirit of thankfulness that goes over if we don't know the one who we're to be thankful for. And I'm asking that that happens today, that we get to know you better. We get to see the things that you've done for us and in us. We get to see the things that you've done historically. And I'm praying and trusting that you would use my words in this entire 65 minutes that we have together to increase our gratitude scale. I pray these things according to your name. Amen. Well, I have to admit, I have major faults. Like, you didn't already know that, right? I mean, I know you know that I have faults, but let me tell you one of them. I know you're going to really be bothered at this, except those of you who do the same thing. I'm a chronic multitasker. I feel like if I'm multitasking, I'm managing my time better, and God loves those who manage their time, right? Or at least that's what I tend to think. But there's some things that you can multitask and do. I mean, believe it or not, some of you are not going to believe you can do this, but you actually can walk and chew gum at the same time. You can do that. That's fine. You can run and work out and listen to music at the same time. You can do a variety of things. One thing you really should not do at the same time is drive and text message. You really should not do that at the same time. You're clapping. You must be, I don't know why, but let me tell you, I do that. I told you you're going to hate me. You have every right to. I know it's stupid. I mean, man, don't bother coming up here afterwards and telling me I'm an idiot or telling me, I know I am. It's dumb. It is. I feel like I'm on crack or something like that. I mean, I'm doing this. Well, I shouldn't be doing this. It's dumb. And I get done. I hit send. I said, never do it again. Not going to do it again. Never again. I say never. And I find myself doing it again. And I admit it is dumb. It's bad. It's stupid. I need to stop. There's some things you just shouldn't multitask on. And there's some things, if you do try to multitask on them, it will bring you harm, it will bring you pain. You cannot be looking for more to come your way, expecting for more to come your way, saying gimme, gimme, gimme when things aren't coming your way, sensing entitled to having things that you don't have. You can't be expecting that, wanting that, being upset when that doesn't happen, and be thankful at the same time. It can't happen. You can't be upset with what you don't have and be thankful for what you do have. I'm under a lot of pressure tonight because what I'm going to talk about is the antidote to entitlement, the antidote to gimme, gimme, gimme. Again, as we talked about the first week, all of us are entitled. We always think it's the other person. It's not the other person. It's ourselves. If you've ever been dissatisfied with what you have and you have no satisfaction, you have a sense of entitlement. And the difficult thing I have here is trying to change the belief, try to make you to believe, to be thankful, is just not going to work. I can't change your belief on thankfulness. I'm just hoping that somehow throughout today what takes place is your attitude changes, not just your belief, but your attitude, the demeanor. I want us to retain an attitude of gratitude, to have this overall pervasive spirit, this attitude that makes up our personality through which we filter things. We need to have an attitude of gratitude versus a belief that we should be grateful, gracious, we should be thankful. And actually in the scientific realm, there's studies that are continuing to come out how when you are a thankful person versus a person who is saying, gimme, 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 when you're a thankful person, you're actually more healthy. You're actually healthier. Blair Justice, who's a PhD and professor emeritus at the University of Texas, says a growing body of research supports the notion that rediscovering a sense of abundance by thinking about those people and things we love lowers the risk of coronary events. When we think that there's enough out there where there's a sense of abundance and we're thankful for those things, it lowers the risk. Versus there's scarcity, there's few things out there, and there's definitely too few things here. I need it here. Versus an attitude of abundance that says, man, I have so much and I am just thankful. As you can have an attitude of gratitude, the research says you will physically be in better shape. The most thankful person that I see in the entire Bible is King David. Some of you said, isn't that Jesus? Isn't that Jesus is the answer to every question? No, it's not. It's King David. It's King David. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He is the second king in the nation of Israel's history. First king is Saul, had a really great beginning, and then he just petered out and really tanked. And while he was petering out and going down, 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 downhill, he is told that your run is done because you're disqualifying yourself spiritually. And while he's doing that, somebody else's run is going up, 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 up. David is increasing in prestige. He's increasing in respect. He's increasing in abilities, increasing in his love for God, as Saul is decreasing in respect, decreasing in his abilities, decreasing his love for God. And so the writing is on the wall. It's very clear. Saul, your run is about done. And David, you're the next guy. Saul has this attitude of gimme, of entitlement, saying, no, 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 it comes me. The kingship comes here, nowhere else. And so he goes out to squash his primary competition, David, who's been a great warrior for him, and the best friend of Saul's own son, Jonathan. So there's this long interlude where David is on the run, running from his life, because he doesn't want to enact and continue make a civil war happen, and Saul is coming after him to kill him. One of the very interesting stories of the Bible, I'm going to give you three of them today from the story of David, is where he is camped out at night, and Saul and his army comes up right where they're camping, and Saul has to go. Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's actually a pretty funny story to read. Here's what happens. 1 Samuel 24. He came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went in to relieve himself. That's funny. That's just good stuff right there. We're not sure, not really sure if it's number one or number two, but Saul goes in to relieve. What? It's in the Bible. What are you getting upset about? And Saul went in to relieve himself. David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, hey, this is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, I will give your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish. Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. His friends were saying, hey, David, this is it. This is it. This is your time. Time for you to get. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Time for you to get. Now is the time. You see, when you're entitled, you view everything as an opportunity to get. You figure if you can get it, you ought to get it. And his friends, David's friends, are saying, this is it. Saul dies. You're the king. Go, kill the dude. David goes up. He creeps up while Saul's doing his business, pulls out the knife, and he cuts off a corner of his cloak. Cuts off a corner of it. Story continues. Afterward, David was conscience stricken for having cut off a corner of his robe. He said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lift my hand against him, for he is the anointed of the Lord. With these words, David rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. David doesn't kill him. He just takes the corner of his garment. But his heart is so pure that he feels bad that he's defiled the position of the king. He realized that, like it or not, Saul is still the guy, and he defiles his garment. He feels bad that he cut off his garment, that he defiled, quote unquote, the Lord's anointed. See, David is able to do this because he's at a place where he's okay with where he is. He doesn't need anything more. And he has built into his life, we see this throughout the Bible over and over and over again, this attitude of gratitude. He'd be okay if more came his way. He'd be okay if things were a little bit easier. But he dwells from an attitude of gratitude. Three ways that we see David being thankful. First one is in this story. David is thankful when things could be better. He's thankful when things could be better. Things are okay, but they could be better. They could be better if he was the king. If he was the king, he would have to be sleeping out in the wild. A lot of us, there's no way you can be thankful if you think something else could be better than you have it right now. You can't be thankful for the one you're dating because you know someone you know is dating somebody better. You can't be thankful for the kids you have because someone else's kids are better. You can't be thankful for the job you have because you could be making more. You can't be thankful for whatever it is. Unless you have the best of the best, whatever it is, the best of the best, no gratitude happens because there's not an attitude of gratitude. When you have an attitude of gratitude, something that pervades you, you're able to be content and thankful with whatever you have, not only if the best possible thing happens to you. See, when we're playing this entitlement comparison thing where I'm looking to see what you have versus what I have, or what I could have versus what I have right now, we try to multitask. We're trying to make sure everything is fair and everything is just. Talk about the first week. God, life is not fair. God is not fair. And when you're trying to make sure that everything is fair, you can't keep score and give thanks at the same time. It's impossible. You can't measure whether or not you have everything you should or everything you could and at the same time give thanks. You can't keep score and give thanks at the same time. David has this attitude of gratitude, of thankfulness of what's happening in and through his life. And he's not keeping score that he shouldn't be the one who's out running around. He's the good one. He shouldn't be the one that's being forced to sleep like a dog. He shouldn't be the one. But he has this attitude of gratitude. He's not keeping score. He's simply giving thanks. I was thinking about this on another vehicle I own. I don't text message when I'm on my motorcycle, believe it or not. I don't. I've got that one. In fact, I don't even talk on the phone when I'm on my motorcycle. I don't do that. A couple weeks ago, I was coming, and I could see this huge, massive storm cloud in the distance. It was obvious rain was coming down, and I was about 10 minutes from home. And so I just got on it. I'm like, I need to get home. I wanted to beat that thing home with all that I possibly could. And I come up to this stop sign, a stop light, and there's about, you know, eight cars on both sides going up. Now, in many states in the United States, it is legal to get on the white line and drive in the middle. I've been in California traffic, and I've gone a half an hour white lining it between cars. Everybody does. It's part of the law. A lot of states, it's totally legal. I'm not sure if it's legal in Ohio or not. I think not, because I don't see anybody doing it. But nonetheless, I decided to do this in this specific situation, because I know I can beat any car off the line, and there'll be open road ahead of me, and I'll almost home. So everyone stopped, and I'm white lining it, and somebody has their window down, and I buzz right by them, and I hear somebody call me a Richard head. They called me that as I'm driving, it's not exactly what they said, but I'm driving. My first reaction, that's a slow burn right there. My first reaction is this, like, this thing. I about stopped the bike, went back, and saw if the person was as tough as their mouth was. So, hey, there's some uttering things when you're in a car and you can go away, which really bothers me. That was my first reaction. Then I realized that's a stupid reaction. Then my second reaction, I thought of, you know, when we're like that, when we immediately see somebody else getting ahead of us, it's this natural response. Someone's getting ahead of me. I can't be thankful. It's not possible for me to be thankful because somebody else might be going further. Now, attitude of gratitude, it doesn't matter if somebody's getting ahead of me or not. I'm going to give thanks as opposed to keep score. Now, David finally does become king. And when he becomes king, great things happen, but he has one really, really bad thing that happens while he's king. He's up on his roof one day, and he looks out over the land, and his roof is higher than everybody else's, and he sees a hottie bathing on the roof beside him, bathing, and her name is Bathsheba. And he abuses his power, and he says, bring her to me, and she has to come. When the king calls for you, you have to come. She comes, and they have sex, and it starts an adulterous affair, an adulterous relationship. She gets pregnant. This is not good, because now he's going to be caught. Now he's going to be found out, unless he can somehow pin it to her husband, except his husband is away. So how can I, he's trying to figure that out. So long story short, his plan doesn't work. And he ends up not only lying, being deceitful, but actually having her husband killed. He murders to cover up his problem. Because there's a woman that he wants, and he can't be thankful for the women that he did have. This guy's married. The guy's got all kinds of women, concubines, as was normal in kings in that culture. Yet, he has something he doesn't have. He can't be thankful for what he has. He wants something else. And finally, he gets called on this. God speaks to a friend of his. His name is Nathan. Oh, speaking to. We have some people coming down or about to come down with offering bags. Yes, we have. I forgot to talk about that. Come on down, offering bags, folks. Now's the time to give. Give thanks. No, this is Yeah, you know, actually, yeah, we have things like this as part of our service, not just because it really helps us do the ministry God wants us to do, but because it's a tactile thing that reminds us to go outside of ourselves. If you're newer here today, you're not sure what we're about, hey, we're just glad you're here. We want to give to you. No need for you to feel pressure or obligation. But if you're around, you know, this is how we build into people. This is how we say thankful to God. This is how we fund infrastructure for Thanksgiving things. This is how we do things in South Africa. But right now we have actually 200 people who are over in South Africa. Very fun right now. This is how we do stuff in Kids Club, all that. Great, great stuff. So if you want to do that, that's great as it comes around. David finally gets called to the carpet. He gets called to the carpet, and a friend of his, a prophet, his name is Nathan, says, you know, you haven't been happy with what you have. Your son that comes to you via Bathsheba, this baby is going to die. This baby is going to die. Now, when we take a look at something like this, hear about God contributing to the death of a little child, it causes us to, understandably so, be upset. Why would God do this? Are you saying God causes this? Or, you know, there's all kinds of big questions here that we can't answer right now. Let me just say, yeah, it's a crazy thing to think that God would do that. I don't know why God would do that. I don't think God does this regularly. Nonetheless, he's God. He can do things that he wants to. God giveth and God taketh away. And God decides to take this little child's life. David is outside praying that God doesn't do this, that God changes his mind. He's praying and praying on his face saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And here's what happens. Then David got up from the ground. After he'd washed, he put on lotions. He changed his clothes. He went into the house of the Lord and worshiped. Then he went to his own house. At his request, they served him food and he ate. This is after his child now has died. And his servant asked him, why are you acting this way? Why are you acting in a thankful way? Why are you talking with God? Why are you connecting with God? David says, while the child was alive, you fasted and wept. But now that the child is dead, you get up and eat. You're supposed to eat when you're thankful. You're supposed to eat when things are going okay. You're supposed to talk to God and go to church when you're, what is this? What is going on with you? And here's what David says in response. He says, well, while the child was still alive, I fasted and wept. I thought, who knows? The Lord may be gracious to me and let the child live. Maybe God will change his mind. He does it every once in a while, you know. But now that he's dead, why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I'll go to him. Speaking of his son, I'll go to him, but he will not return to me. This is one of the verses that implies that little children, all little children, go on to heaven. David says, well, he's in a better place. Well, I'll go to him, but he ain't coming back. I'll go to him, but he is not coming back. And David said, why be bitter? What do I get out of that? I need to have an attitude of gratitude. I need to be thankful. David is thankful when things go right. He's thankful when things go right, and he's thankful when things go wrong. He's thankful when things go wrong. He loses his child. He's hurt. He loses his child, and yet he's thankful. One time, David was also having a major national crisis, and the good luck charm of the nation of Israel, the Ark of the Covenant, if you saw Raiders of the Last Ark, there's a big ark, you know, that they were after. That ark, that big object, that holy sacred object, contained the Ten Commandments, and they would carry that thing into battle, and it signified the Lord's presence. It would fire everybody up, and they would have victories, because God was somehow present, and they were reminded that God was present. And this ark is gone. This ark gets taken away, and it's lost. It's taken away. And then it gets returned. When it gets returned, we see that David is thankful when things are good. David is thankful when things could be better. He's thankful when things are bad. And David is thankful when things are good. He expresses this gratitude. He expresses this thankfulness. The Ark of the Covenant is back in the city gates. And here's what it says that he does in the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 6, verse 14 and following. It says, David, wearing a linen ephod, danced before the Lord with all his might, while he and the entire house of Israel brought up the Ark of the Lord with shouts and the sound of trumpets. As the Ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window. Michal was David's wife at this point, this is before Bathsheba, also the daughter of Saul. And when she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. She gets upset. What are you doing, expressing gratitude? You're leaping and you're so happy. You're dead. Kings don't do that. Kings don't prance around half naked in front of people, overcome with their joy. What are you thinking? What are you doing? See, she does. She has an attitude of entitlement of gimme, gimme, gimme. She doesn't understand why this would happen. But David does. David does. He understands that when you're thankful, you express it. Don't you love when you look at somebody and say, hey, are you okay? And they go, yeah, I'm fine. I'm happy. Why? Well, why don't you tell your face? You know, you say you're happy, but tell your face. David doesn't just say he's happy. He shows his happy. Do you show your gratitude in any way, shape, or form, you know, there's various ways to show your gratitude, to remember the things that have happened for you. Robert Emmons, who's a professor of psychology at the University of California and has written a book called Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier. In a recent interview, he says this: the practice of gratitude can increase happiness levels by around 25%. This is not hard to achieve. A few hours writing a gratitude journal over 3 weeks can create an effect that lasts 6 months, if not more. This is the studies. You want to feel happy for 6 months? Take time journaling things you're thankful for. Express it. Express it. David expresses it dancing. He also expresses it writing. Cultivating gratitude brings about other health effects, such as longer and better quality sleep time. David has a journal. He writes things down in his journal. It's called the Book of Psalms. Much of that is about thanksgiving. He journals things. People of this whole service, you have noticed, have been, as they've been thought about something that they're thankful for, have been writing it down. You know, I just thought for myself for a second. I'm thankful that you all put up with my sense of humor. I'm very thankful. Honestly, I'm dead serious. I'm thankful that I'm at a place where I'm allowed to be me. Very, very thankful for that. See, the way that you and I express gratitude is different than God's desired way of gratitude. See, our current economy of gratitude says this: if you do for me what I want right now, then I'll thank you. When do I give thanks? If you do for me what I want right now, then I return thanks. I return it. It's a quid pro quo. It's entitlement. You're only entitled to me saying thank you if you do for me what I want right now. I'll only be happy. I'll only have a gracious demeanor if what needed to go my way last hour went my way. If you don't do for me what I want you to do for me, if you don't treat me the way I want to be treated, if you don't give me the raise that I want, if you don't give me the, if whatever, then I can't be thankful. Thankfulness is a paycheck. Comes in, it's a bartering, it's an agreement. No, that it is not. That's the way our economy works. That's not the way God's economy works. He encourages us to have an attitude of gratitude. We're constantly remembering and writing down the things he's done for us and remembering those. I was struggling with this last week. I've had a very stressful week. And as I've thought about this stress level, it is crazy. It is crazy why I've been stressed. I've had more sleepless nights the last 2 weeks than I have in a long time. And you know the reason why? It's because I've had to buy a new car. I've had to buy a new car. But I have a car that 1996 Blazer, took it in, 141,000 miles on it, needs $1,300 of work that I know of, and there's a bunch of other stuff it needs as well, and the mechanic and others I consulted with said, hey, it's not worth putting money into this car. It's done. I wasn't planning on that. So now all of a sudden I'm thrust into a situation where I have to figure out what kind of car to get. I haven't considered this at all. And what's crazy is, much of the time in my past, I really didn't have any options. I just had to take the only car I could afford. Now, I have more liquid savings than I've had. All of a sudden, I have options. And not only do I have options, but this is a great time to buy a car if you haven't been paying attention to the news. It's a great time to buy a car. If you want a Toyota, you get 0% for 3 years. You want a GM product, they're practically giving them away to you. I mean, it's a great time. But I'm not sure exactly what I want, and I'm not sure I'm stressed out. I'm trying to figure this all out. And in the midst of this, I finally realize, as I keep waking up in the middle of the night wondering about this financial responsibility I have to do the right thing, I finally realize, this is crazy. I'm stressed out when I have options. I have options, and I'm stressed out. This is nuts. So I did an exercise race I'm going to walk you through right now where I actually journaled and went through my entire car history. I don't know if you've ever done this before. You can think about anything in your history. Think about the cars you've driven. Think about the education you have. Think about the people you've dated. Think about the houses you lived or the apartments you've rented. Think about the achievements you've had, the jobs. Pick any category in your life and follow it out over years, and I guarantee you, you will find the ability to have an attitude of gratitude. I remember telling my parents after I drove, hey, you're going to buy me a car? You're going to buy me a car? They laughed at me. Yeah, right, buy you. My parents were never going to buy me a car. So I had to go buy my very first car, 1978 orange Chevy Vega, right there. Orange Chevy. Now, thankfully, Google Images helped me out with this. Very few of these cars were actually my car, but this was exactly like it, an orange Chevy Vega, except the only difference was mine was very orange, but mine was orange mostly because of rust. I mean, it was all over the car. And just when I got it all fixed up and I got it repainted white, my engine went bad on it. And I changed the engine myself in my parents' garage. I hoisted the engine up. I got a new engine. I put it in. You know what I'm thankful for? As I look back on that, I'm thankful that that opportunity is how I started to get more mechanically inclined and how I'm not intimidated by cars or mechanical things. Very, very thankful for that. And I'm also very, very thankful as I drove that car for a few years and finally gave out with me in college. I got another car next. That car was a white CJ7. Yeah, boy, there it was. Now, this car was a full-time four-wheel drive car, V8, full-time four-wheel drive. This car got about somewhere between 6 and 8 miles a gallon. With my Vega, I would have to borrow money for oil. Seriously, I would. My friends would laugh. I would borrow money for oil. I burned more oil on my Chevy Vega than I burned gasoline. This thing, I was always running. I looked cool. I felt I was cool. I was thankful for this because I could do four-wheeling and stuff. But, man, I needed to get another car. My next car after this was a diesel rabbit. I completely went to the other side of the spectrum. I said, 42 miles a gallon, that'll work for me. Thank you very, very much. It was totally different. I was thankful when I didn't have to go to the pump as much, but it was harder to be thankful when I was going up hills. I mean, I would have to look at it. I was like a trucker. I would try to get my speed going down the hill, and then coming up the hill, it eventually started petering out. But I was thankful. I was thankful for the things that this car did for me. And then my next car after this, was my very first car that I had when I had a full-time job. I went to work for a church doing student ministry, and I thought, man, your first full-time paying job, the American way, what do? You get a car payment. So here it was. This was a Honda Civic Si. I had a lease payment on this, $220 a month for 4 years. This car was sweet, 12 valves, which was a lot back then. This, or maybe it was 16. It hauled. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal car. The only bummer was I had $220 every month. It was always too much month at the end of my money. And yet, God took care of me in the midst of those hard times. He did. I'm thankful that I never literally ever went hungry, even when I had a car payment I really shouldn't have had. My next car after this, that's right when I got married, by the way. I got married there, and now Libby, now both of our cars, we're going to talk about all of our cars together. When that car went away and the lease payment was up, I had saved no money. That happens when you lease, you know. You can't save. You're going, really? Yeah, really. That's what happened. So the lease went away. I didn't have any money. So my parents gave me their car that wasn't good enough for them any longer. The car that I learned to drive on as a 16-year-old, this 1981 blue Chevy Citation. They gave it to me. I always said my parents never gave me anything. They would give me their car when it wasn't good for them. And that meant it wasn't good. This car, the brakes kept locking up. When I got out of the car, I would have to take a hose and hose down the rotors because they were steaming so bad because the brakes were grabbing. I would hose them down. Finally, that wasn't working any longer. I couldn't afford to get a fix, and I finally just died, done. My 1981 Chevy Citation went away. But right in the nick of time, my father-in-law had somebody give him a car that he didn't want, so he gave it to me, and here it is right here, a Chevy Cavalier. It was a former cop car. It was a pretty cool car. It had been totaled, been put back together at Creek, but boy, it got me from point A to point B. Again, I saw God supply a need for me. Then after this car was dying, going, and there it was, right there. I bought a Ford F-250, 1978 Ford F-250, except it wasn't this nice, it was only black primer. And I bought a black primer truck because I just had a house fire. Libby and I had a house fire, lost everything we owned, and had no renter's insurance. Everything was gone. We had some friends rally around us and help us out financially, and we realized the best thing to do was going to be to build our own house. So I built our house every spare moment I had when I was after work or on the weekends or whatever. So I needed an old beater truck to go get the lumber and put it. So that was my life. It was our life, totally building this house. And that really put us on our feet and got us better place financially. So I'm thankful. That truck, that old black primer truck that I bought for, I think it was $600, was a sign to me of how I went to a new place and God helped Libby and I. Then this next vehicle after this, Lib's brother-in-law, brother-in-law. Her brother gave it to us, a Pontiac Sunbird. Great car, rusted really bad, but it was free. Then it died. Next one was the first car I bought when I came to Cincinnati. I needed a car. It had died. I had a friend of mine had an Audi 5000S. He said, I'll give it to you for $4,200. I said, that's pretty good. I had $3,600 in cash. I borrowed $600 from my parents. Had this car. At that time, I lived in Hyde Park. At that point, actually, Crossroads is only supposed to be for people in Mount Lookout and Hyde Park. Anybody could come, but we never started the church to be this huge regional phenomenon. It was just that. So when I had this Audi, like I fit in the whole Hyde Park. So I was thankful for that. And then that car started to go downhill, and my dad was going to get rid of his American-made Cutlass. And so I said, no, where's my Cutlass? Oh, I skipped that one. Cutlass went away, sold the Audi, made a couple thousand. There it is. Took that one, sold the Audi, made a couple thousand dollars. And then we needed a minivan. And again, my parents' car was going to die. They had it for 10 years. We got our first minivan from them, a hand-me-down, the Chrysler Caravan. That's the next one, the red one. Right? That was next, guys. Boom, it was up there before. And I was thankful that we had a vehicle that could haul five of us around. I was very, very thankful. The next car we had was the Chevy Venture. We had this car. I had a bunch of GM points. We had an uncle who worked for GM. We were able to pay cash for this car. First brand new car we ever had, able to pay cash for it. Next car after this was a car that's dead now. I was so thankful for this car because it's the first car I had in years and years and years that matched my personality type. I'm not an Olds Cutlass guy. I'm really not. I'm not a VW Beetle guy. I'm not a Sunbird guy. I was thankful for this. And then it died. And so then it caused me to have this whole season of gratitude. And I finally did get a car. I'm very, very excited about it. I'm not going to show you what it is, by the way, because I'd like to have some anonymity, but I paid cash for it. It was awesome. And I have no savings left any longer, but paid cash. You know what I found? You know what I found out in the midst of this whole thing? I found out that I've had 15 cars in 27 years between two drivers. 15 cars in 27 years. Seven of the cars we've had were gifts. They were out-and-out gifts. I've spent total transportation with two people over 27 years. We've been married for 20, but when I went back 27, I spent total, including those lease payments, $48,080 for all my transportation. That's an average of $2,800 a vehicle. I've driven for 324 months since I've turned 16, and of those 324 months, I have had 320 months where I have not had a car payment. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for the sign of every sin. I'm thankful that GM is hurting and sucking gas, and I got rebates and GM card points of 4,000 and people in GM to pay cash for a GM product right now. I could do anything, name anything. People I've dated, kids I have, jobs I've had, houses I've had, ways that people have put me down and hurt me. I could identify the people who have backstabbed me, and I could still find something I'm thankful. Name anything. When you have an attitude of gratitude, you get stopped for a moment, but it overcomes you because you can't stay away from God. Because when you know God, when God is close with you, you don't feel entitled. You don't feel like more needs to be coming my way. You don't tell God that he's got to prove that he cares for you. No, you are thankful where you are. You have an attitude that just pervades your life where you say, man, God, I could just keep going on. And here's one. You know, not until I went through that did I realize that I've even talked about how I think my parents should be more generous because they don't give me like gifts and Christmas gifts and stuff like that the way others do. They give loans. I've talked about that a lot, like even giving cards. You don't even like write out a lot in cards. I've talked about that a lot. I didn't know, Russ, so I went through that. How many cars my parents gave me? They may have been pieces of crap. But I'm telling you, I had a new sense of gratitude for my parents. I had a new sense. They could have taken those cars and gotten $750 for them. They could have done that. In fact, they got a minivan right now. It's on its last legs. I call dibs. I do, because our other one's going out. We have another minivan. I forgot to show that one. We got another minivan we have right now. And I'm thankful for generous mom and dad. Here's what we're going to do the rest of our time today. And what I'm going to ask you to do the rest of your time the next 10 days. right now in Kids Club, what they're learning is to make a ledger of thankfulness, to write down things they're thankful for and then put their initials on it and drop it in a can. We're going to have a can or some container around our house. I encourage you to do the same thing and tell everybody you're going to have Thanksgiving with. And if you're not going to have it with any family members, you don't have any family members, we're going to have it with three other people. Talk about this ahead of time. And as you go about your days, if you think about something you're thankful for to foster that gratitude, write it down, put your initials on the corner, drop it in the container. And then on Thanksgiving, go around and just pull one out at a time and count your blessings. This will create and foster an attitude of gratitude. God, here's what I'm praying for right now. I'm praying that you would create in this place right now a spirit of graciousness, a spirit of thankfulness. You don't have to prove yourself to us any longer. You do not. You don't have to prove yourself. We're going to remember the things that you've done, the things that are inextricably linked with your character. And we're not going to be upset about what we don't have. We're going to be thankful for who you are. We're going to be thankful for what you've already done in the past. So God, receive these pieces of paper and help us connect with you right now.